Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Small Screen Star Wars. As always, I am Julian Muesch. I'm joined by Rachel Wilkinson.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about Andor Season 1, Episode 5, The Axe Forgets. Great title. Mm-hmm. Love the title. Might be the best Star Wars title, episode title for like a show.
Sure.
It's so, I mean, I guess on its own, it's just kind of three words, but
yeah.
In context with,
I did like the context.
The episode itself, I just think it's so cool and it like, it's very thematic. And anyway, we'll get to that. But before we do, let me just remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at Tower Babblecast, Facebook.com/Tower Babblecast, and head over to our website, towerofbabble.ca, to find everything we do, including our flagship show, the Tower of Babel podcast. Rachel and I, you know this if you've been listening live, which we're on right now, Thursday nights, YouTube and Twitch. We just recorded our summer movie wager results. I won't spoil who won. But again, if you're listening live, you'd know already. But that'll be live in the feed next week. So that's a little preview for you folks listening to the Star Wars stuff here. But you'll find that in the Tower Babel feed. So look for that there. You can also support the show. If you like us and you like what we do, it would be very helpful because, you know, inflation, you know, I know, understand things are expensive. And if you can't afford it, no pressure. We don't want you to feel pressured at all. But it helps keep the lights on. And you can head over to Patreon, patreon.com/TowerBabbleCast, B-A-B-B-L-E. And we do a monthly film club there. And this last month we did The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Great movie.
Yeah, it really was a very fun movie. and looking forward to it quite a bit. We're doing Dawn of the Dead, right?
Oh, that's so scary.
Yeah, Dawn of the Dead this month for October. Obviously, because it's spooky season.
Yeah, it's spooky season. It kind of got us. So
that's right. And we've kind of already pre-picked what our November movie is going to be, which is Avatar.
Right.
A movie that is going to have its sequel 10 years later, basically, the following month. And of course, we typically try to pick a holiday movie for December. So just keep that in mind. But again, those are all
exclusive.
I'm going
to have to pick that.
Well, it's okay. There's lots of good ones. This is exclusive to the Patreon. So if you like what we do here, you want to hear us talk about more movies, you can, I guess we haven't done shows on there. It is a movie club. But in this case, we're talking about shows, but in a very similar format. You can head over to patreon.com/TowerBabbleCast. Okay. With that out of the way. Let's get into this this review. I will mention, though, I wouldn't say it's a correction, but a little tidbit of information we got from a listener. And by the way, a perk of the Patreon is you get access to our Discord, which is a ton of fun. Rachel, you're on the Discord, I think, right?
I am. Yeah. Yes. I'm in there. I just lurk.
She's a lurker. We're all kind of...
I should engage more. I'm sorry. I think it's, I forget about Discord because I'm on Discord for my Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes Guild and there's a lot going on in there. So I tune it out.
Yeah. So no,
I'm a bad Discorder.
Hey, you know, but Discord's, you know, we were talking about how in the last episode, in the last show we just recorded, the summer movie wager thing, we're talking about TikTok and how I don't really get it. I didn't really understand Discord for a long time. And the thing is, it still kind of confuses me because it feels like it's just kind of like a chat app, but like a super advanced one.
Right, yeah.
But I understand that you can do audio stuff in there too, and it's for gaming and et cetera. But
yeah, and you can keep it like really anonymous, and then people don't have, like strangers don't have your phone number.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like you don't have to have your full, like your actual real name
stranger,
in there either.
You have to put your phone number in TikTok? Can you not be
they're two completely different things, but it's like if you're comparing WhatsApp and Discord, like WhatsApp has your phone number in it, whereas Discord doesn't. So it's a little bit more secure if you're using it for like gaming and that kind of stuff and like interacting with people that you don't actually know in real life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's what I assume the purpose of Discord is for. And isn't
it
all encrypted and stuff too? Yeah.
I think so. And it's fun.
I think it's encrypted. Yeah.
It's a fun spot.
It's a fun spot. Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, the point being is, let me just go to the right spot here. Our a loyal, longtime listener, friend of the show, Alex Pena, was talking about how we were talking about last week how gorgeous the landscape was on the planet that Andor's on.
Yes,
which is Adani, right? And we're like, oh, it's so great that they're filming on location. It's so refreshing and beautiful. And Alex said that they were, and I'll, you know, Alex, you know, you sent this in with, I think, I did not get permission to read this. I'll just be honest with you guys. I apologize, Alex. But it's just such a very cool thing. I had to share it. That it was filmed in the Scottish Highlands and that they've actually been there before. And that particular mountain that they're on is famous for a power station built into the middle of it. And it's a kind of a dam that blocks off, it's electric hydro powered dam, right?
Cool. So the dam in, is that real then?
Yes. So when, yes, that's also a real thing. It's obviously they've added little bits of Star Wars-iness
to it. Well, yes, of course. Yeah. But, that's really cool though. I didn't realize the dam was real. I thought that was like CGI or something else.
Yeah. And like, they posted pictures of the dam in, on the comment here. And it like, just on its own, it looks very Star Wars-y. Like it doesn't really need much changing to be Star Wars-y, but they did make some small tweaks. But largely speaking, practical. And, so it's called Ben Cruachan. I don't know how to say that. C-R-U-A-C-H-A-N. Cruachan. I don't know. And anyway, they thought it looked familiar and then they looked it up and they're like, oh yeah, this is definitely it. So.
Oh, cool.
Great
info.
It gets more interesting, actually. So this is where it gets way cooler, which is that... The line from last week where they talked about how there used to be lots of people up there, but then they all got moved down to the factories and now there's barely anyone up here. Mm-hmm. Right. That actually has more meaning because, and I'll just read the quote here from Alex, which is that I think you missed the deep take here, that in the Scotland, those glens were full of people until the 18th century when they were cleared out to create farmland and were sent to cities to work in factories in the early industrial revolution. You know, an Easter egg for those who know Scottish history, which of course I didn't, and I apologize.
No, very interesting. That's super cool. Yeah, I didn't realize any of that. Man, how cool would it be to like be someone who gets to like scout locations for these like Star Wars shows and you know, like other things within this like universe of filming, like I bet you that's a whole job where someone's like, they're like, hey, this is kind of what
location scouting is
like,
awesome. Yeah. I think about it all the time. What a job.
That'd be such an awesome job. Yeah. But great catch, Alex. That's awesome.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing, just to what's the word I'm looking for here? Absolve myself a little bit, which is to say, if you send in something really cool to the show like that, assume it's going to be read on the show. And if you don't want it read on the show, just let me know. Then I'll definitely not do that. I don't want to break anyone's, personal embargoes and reveal any secrets here. Although this is Scottish history, so it's really no secret. But definitely a cool Easter egg, and I think adds
a little bit
of texture to the show in a much more interesting way than I even already thought. Even though I thought it already had some interesting texture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. Next, we are going to talk about episode 5, like I said, The Axe Forgets. This is a episode directed by Susanna White, we talked about last week, written by Dan Gilroy and Tony Gilroy. Tony Gilroy, obviously, the one who's been closest to this show, but Dan Gilroy is his brother, also a writer and director, and has, you know, a couple of their own kind of big names on their filmography.
Okay.
The writer of Nightcrawler, the writer of Kong Skull Island, Velvet Buzzsaw, let's see here, Real Steel. That movie's very fun. The Bourne Legacy. And he's actually directed 4 movies as well, including Velvet Buzzsaw, and Nightcrawler, and Roman J. Israel Esquire. So these are some of these movies I know, some I don't, but point being, it's interesting that he got his brother involved here. He obviously has a sharp mind for writing, and it's clear that this show just makes all the other Star Wars shows look silly by comparison. When you look at it from just a pure writing standpoint, it's like night and day. It's like, and again, this is not to disparage the other shows. I really like the other Star Wars shows.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know. I don't disagree with you, but I don't fully agree with you, because I feel like there are other shows that have grasped my attention a little bit better, and like than this one has. Like,
is it because you feel like this episode was a particularly slow one?
This one was really slow. This one I felt like didn't even need to be here. I won't lie.
So
I feel like
go here.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just feel like everything that's in this episode could have either been tacked onto the one before or added to the next one. Like, I feel like this didn't need to be its own. But we'll see.
I think that's fair. I almost kind of feel like this show could have done something really cool by releasing episodes 3 at a time, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And because, you know, it's 12 episodes season, and the first 3 were dropped, and it was kind of like a mini movie, right? You had this kind of
first
act, second act, third act, kind of beginning, middle, and end kind of thing. And it's told, it's kind of one contained story, although it is connected to where we are now, one contained story in 3 distinct breaks. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Seems to be doing the same thing. We got the beginning, and we just had the middle, which was, you know, mostly prep for the third one.
This feels like prep for the next one, which I kind of already thought was what was happening in the last episode. Sure, so I'm like, okay. But
well,
I'm not mad at it.
3 days, right? So, yes. You know, they did tell us, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not mad at it, but I just, That's all I'll say is, like, I do just think that there is other things that have held my attention a little bit better and that I've been a bit more excited about so far than Andor, but I'm liking it. I just, it's hard because I just loved most of Mando like so much. So
sure. Well, yeah, Mando's still very good. This is not to disparage these other shows.
No, of course not. I get what you're saying, though.
But naturally, they're going to be compared. We're talking about Star Wars shows. They're naturally going to be compared. And from a pure, like, if you're putting them up next to each other, Mando versus Andor. Andor is just, from a pure writing standpoint, is just miles ahead. Its characters are deeper and more intricate. The interactions are more thoughtful. And, of course, a lot of that is performances, but you'd have to have good scripts to get good performances, right?
That's true.
Because, you know, we talked about this all the time, but Hayden Christensen's performance in those movies wasn't in the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy wasn't great. And he was certainly not helped at all by a brutal script. The line about the sand, you know, that's like no one could make that sound good.
It's a meme now.
Right. Well, at least, thank God, it's a meme. At least
we can joke about it now. But that's just part of the thing where it's like there's certain people that should take help when writing, like intimate,
like
intimate
Tony Dilroy
scenes.
Did with his brother, right?
Okay, yeah.
And you know, by the and like, of course, you know, George Lucas also didn't direct The Empire Strikes Back, famously, right?
Right,
and that is considered probably the best Star Wars movie that they've ever done. you know, this is not to say that these people are bad at their job.
No, of course not.
There are people who are like very good at these things. In this case, Tony Dilroy and Dan Gilroy are very good writers, and it's just coming through in what I think is the most complex and thoughtful. And I'm not going to say necessarily interesting, because it depends on what you find interesting. You know,
yeah, that's fair.
You know, a lot of people love the Easter eggs and the kind of the characters from the Clone Wars popping up all over Mando and all that stuff. And that stuff is certainly fun. This is a very different tone, as we talked about. But what it does give you instead is instead of kind of reaching outward into the universe to grab characters you know. This is reaching inwards into new characters to make you appreciate them more.
Yeah, of course.
And giving us new characters to make that galaxy feel bigger, which I think it's desperately needed
that
for a long time.
I very much like that they're not just throwing us
more of the same.
Like, you know, right? More of the same. Yeah, like I said this in one of the other episodes, I really like seeing like fully new people, like a full new group of just brand new characters. I'm like, oh, awesome. Like, it's not just like, oh, here's some like kind of extras that might have a line or two, but it's mostly just about this guy that you already know about and you've already seen. So, right. Yeah.
And like, so.
Because, they very easily could have just made this all about Saw Gerrera and, you know,
his
stuff
partisans.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they certainly, he gets a reference.
But it's not just
I think that's almost better. It's like we know what Saw Gerrera was doing, and we've seen him
exactly.
We had an episode in Rebels that led into Rogue One, and you know, like I don't know. Like, I'm not saying don't tell those stories. I think there's time and place for them, but like they don't have to be pulled into every story. So
yeah, exactly.
And for all we know, we might actually see Saw at some point in this series. You know, so get Forrest Whitaker back in here. Get him doing that fun really weird way of speaking. Okay, so let's get into this episode. I don't think it's going to take us very long to cover this. This might be the shortest amount of notes I've ever had at like only 4 pages.
It's not not that it's not too deep, but I don't even it's quick.
It moves quickly. It's only it comes in at like 40 something minutes. I think what's the runtime here? It's like 42 minutes or something like that. It's not the shortest episode of the season so far, but it's like challenges for that. I think it's probably the second shortest.
Yeah.
And again, it's like from a pacing standpoint, I think it's really good. Like, I think it's it fits together really well, but it's the most jumpy in terms of the fact that like it cuts back and forth between these different groups very quickly. There's some very cool cuts. There's some very cool kind of like the way that the themes weave through these different stories, I think is very, very cool. But it is it's just a bit more, I would say, again, when I talk about traditional, I mean more of like a traditional television storytelling, which is that it doesn't behoove to feel like a movie where we spend all of our time with one person or, you know, some like this, even the way that Game of Thrones, you know, eventually turned into, you know, all over, this is kind of where you would spend like, okay, one episode, we're going to hang out with these characters and the next episode will be these characters and vice versa. And then eventually they'll meet. This is everybody's on, like, you know, as we get new characters and they're introduced, it's just more characters, not, you know, we're not going to spend time with these.
And then all the little storylines kind of at the same time. But this one, I did feel like it was mostly like the main kind of storyline, right? Mm-hmm. And little tidbits from kind of what's going on. No, not really. And like, even the others, like, you know, the other stuff is very minimal. Yeah, Cyril's very minimal, and like, Mon Mothma's stuff, that storyline's very minimal. Like, it's just
Luthen barely even appears in this episode.
Yeah. So, yeah, all those storylines are very, like, very much happening kind of in the background right now. So,
yeah. That'll all come to a head at some point sooner than later.
Oh, I mean, of course.
We're still following Cyril for a reason.
Yes.
So let's start with him. So, again, in the same vein as last week, we're going to follow each kind of section. Instead of jumping back and forth. Because it's just way too fast otherwise.
Yeah.
It'd be confusing. So, okay, we'll start with Cyril because that's where the episode starts. And we get this shot of him staring out his window. And, you know, the Screen Crush recap said, oh, well, he's staring at, it's not technically a sunrise because he's on a lower level and it's like a reflection off of buildings. You know, I don't think he actually lives on a lower level of Coruscant in the sense that, like, sure, he's not at like the top of like a shining tower somewhere, but he's not in a lower level. I don't think he's in, you know, one of the sub levels of Coruscant.
No, I didn't think he was in one of the like subterranean levels because, like, I feel like you don't see the sun down there.
I don't. I don't think you do, and that's why. So it's like, you know, they might do. You know, I don't know if you've seen Lord of the Rings. I think you have. You said you've been watching it. You know, like Khazad Dûm, they have these giant mirrors that reflect light around so that they can like grow stuff inside. That's cool.
Right.
I presume there's some form of that somewhere going on in Coruscant on a planet that is an entire city. But because where else do they get their food? You know,
well, they import it all.
I guess that's tough.
It's like the main hub. That's why they control all the trade routes. That's why the trade routes are so important.
Let's not get into the trade routes right now. There's lots of plenty of time for trade route conversations, you know, later. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. I don't know if I think that is the actual sun he's seeing and not a reflection.
That's what I assumed. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's neither here nor there. He's staring out this window and he looks like he's either was crying or is about to cry. Now, I don't know how to parse that. Like, I think the look on his face was brilliant acting. Just that look alone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Speaks volumes. But I don't know what's saying. Is he just miserable because he feels like he messed up? Is he miserable because he's back living with his mom? And we'll find out very soon why that would be miserable. But
yeah,
is he miserable? The impression I get, if you really want to be, it's like, you know, what's he kind of staring off into space for? Is because he feels like he has no direction in life. He feels like he's a failure.
Right? I was just saying, like, conveyed from him very much that he just, like, he's defeated, like his posture's defeated later on, and like he's just like kind of wallowing in his own little pity party of I got fired and what am I going to do with my life now, right? So my life is over. I'm not a police cop or a space cop anymore.
Yeah, but so, like, I think you know, you got to keep things in perspective, Cyril. Most of the time the people who don't leave that job by choice end up walking away from it, you know.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Now, how many commanders did Vader choke out before we got
yeah,
to
they're just
gonna like,
end up getting
Ozzel
shot.
Or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's actually, you know, all things considered, he's actually probably one of the lucky ones. And his mom lives on Coruscant, so he's got to have some money.
Probably, yes. Yeah.
You know, and
well,
she's
not
completely in the subterranean levels, you know.
Yeah. I gathered that from, like, having family favors and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It seems like somebody in their family is up there doing something.
Yeah, the Uncle Harlow.
Yes, yeah.
So we find out that he has a very overbearing mother, who we of course saw slap him last episode, but then she actually gets you know, I think an actual line of dialogue this time. She's played by a lovely actress, Catherine Hunter. And yeah, she's just so good here.
Yeah, she is.
One of a kind voice.
She's just so itty bitty. Like, she's so tiny. Like, if you just like look at them sitting. Yeah, when you look at them sitting in like the booth when they kind of like do a side shot, it's like, cause he's like a whatever, probably a tall dude, but like an average sized dude. But she just looks so teeny tiny compared to him. I'm like, oh, like, but I get it though. You have that, like, I think that's part of the point of her character is like in stature, she's so small, but she's got such of like a.
Right.
Like a, you know, like an overbearing personality for such a tiny person.
Well, yeah. She has a presence about her that
commands
this kind of, not necessarily like, it just, she's scary to me. I don't know how
to
put it. She has been in many, many, many things. I mean, she's most well known for playing Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream, Julie Taymor's A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
But she was also in an animated show that I loved, which was Tron Uprising, a very short-lived show. And she was just most recently, I recognized her from The Witch. She played the witches in The Tragedy of Macbeth. Just, again, obvious choice there.
Yeah.
So anyway, loved her casting decision here. This, again, another example of how this show, I think, is to some degree outpacing some of these other Star Wars shows by just its casting choices, even alone, you know. I just think it's
like these supporting inspired. And like extra characters are still have a lot of like substance to them.
Oh,
they're not
they're
like a hollow, forgettable character, right? Yeah,
right, exactly. And like, you know, like what did we know about Madame Garza or whatever from Book of Boba Fett? Nothing, and then she died, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, so. And she's played by that lady from Splashdance, and she's awesome. And then she barely gets any screen time. And
do you mean Flashdance?
What did I say?
You said splash dance.
Yeah, like, is that not what it's called?
Splash dance.
I think is there not a scene where she gets a bucket of water dropped on her? That's why I thought splash.
Yeah, no, but she's a welder. It's splash dance.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Idiot.
I've never seen that movie. Yeah, sorry. Anyway, that's hilarious. That's a very funny mistake. You're welcome to quote me on that. Okay, so she's talking to him over what seems like breakfast. She's like, you know, fun Star Wars Easter egg. She gives him a looks like cereal with blue milk.
Yeah.
And he's not impressed. She talks about how he's slouching. She has this kind of whole concept of this, like, well, you kind of slouching or being a leader is not a state of mind. Not something you do sometimes. It's a state of mind. You have to always be doing it. By the time you realize you're slouching, it's too late. And then it's, you know, people think you're a disappointment. I think what she said was, you might as well wear a sign around your chest that says, I'm going to be a disappointment.
I'm a disappointment.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus.
Yeah. So harsh, right?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, her performance is so good because despite, I think everyone knows somebody who kind of has an overbearing parent that can kind of be like that. I think she certainly embodies some of the people I know from my heritage, the Hungarian
right,
aunts,
right, yeah.
and stuff I know who are just very much, some of the same mentality about them.
Yes. And the opinions and the nitpicking and the, right, yeah, and you're just like,
but it's always couched in like, it's kind of always backhanded compliments constantly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And so I think it's just really nuanced and fun to watch because I think it's very relatable. And, anyway, but hers are extra harsh. So might as well wear a sign around that says you're a disappointment. And then she's talking about how it's like, oh, I wish I could have seen you while you were doing well. Like, at least I could have remembered that. Right. Again, another backhanded
right.
compliment. And talks about how,
oh my God,
she never came to visit. And he's like, well, I had a spare room. You never came. And I love this line. He's like, well, I don't remember exactly what it was. But
open,
like,
invitation is what she says.
Yeah. Well, she says that. Any intelligent species knows that an open invitation is no invitation at all, right?
Yeah, which that's such a guilt tripping mom thing to do.
Right.
Be like, oh, you didn't really invite me. Because, like, you didn't specifically ask me to come.
Yes. In fact, it's funny because I had a conversation with my grandmother today where she was mad about my mom for doing almost that exact same thing. I'm leaving on Sunday and we're having dinner on Friday. And she's like, well, she said maybe Saturday or Friday and she hasn't specified to me. So she has to.
Yes.
It's like, well, okay. All right, grandma.
Yeah. It's like they hear about something like word of mouth and it's like, well, I wasn't sent a specific invite. Right. So I guess I'm not invited.
You know about it now. Like, what's that? Anyway. So I just thought that was really like, how sharp is that? So good.
It is.
Right?
So on the nose about like those inner working, like, family things. Yeah.
Being honest, I kind of agree with her. I think an open invitation is kind of like a half invitation. It's like, we want you there, but it's like, not now, you know?
That's the difference between the way you phrase something of like inviting someone of saying like, oh, like, you should come. I want you to come to this thing and you can come if you want. Because someone you can come if you want is like, okay, but like, do you want me there? Or you know, you're like, you're leaving it up to me to decide when you should be the person to be inviting me. So,
Right.
So yeah, so she's not wrong.
Like I said, relatable.
Yeah.
So she says she's going to call in a favor with Uncle Harlow. And I love how she was like, no, he'll appreciate when and how I ask for the favor, because I've been saving for this moment. I just like this kind of like long-term family planning in the sense that, like, oh, I need to save these favors for the right opportunities. I don't know exactly
right.
when to do it.
Yes, and yes.
My brother will appreciate that I've been thinking about this in this thoughtful way. I just think it speaks volumes about how him and his entire family behave.
Yes.
And of course, so
family politics.
Yeah. She kind of questions him on the fact that he has no future prospects, right? Like, what kind of job are you going to get? And by the way, I recognize this whole line of questioning as well, because my brother didn't have a job for a very long time. So there was a lot of like, are you looking for a job? Are you getting a job? What are you doing? Like, all that kind of stuff is because, and by the way, the subtext here is that I don't want you living here.
Yeah. It's
like, you gotta, so you can go live somewhere else.
Yeah. You know? Figure your life out. Like, yeah, you can land here for a little bit, but like, you need to have a plan. You need to have something you're going to do. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so she calls in this favor, and we come back, we cut back to them, and she's like, oh, well, I had the call. You know, he needs to think about it, which is the other thing where it's like, he didn't even give a specific like answer, but he's like, let me think about it. Right.
And
this little exchange was that, like, she talks about how, you know, you need to study Uncle Harlow more. And, you know, I had a hard time describing the series of events that led us here, which leads me to think that, like, and then the way Cyril reacts to that, which is basically like an extreme hostility to his mom the whole time. Right. Like, I think deservedly so, which is like, oh, I forgot how annoying you are, basically, is what he said, and how kind of like in my face and in my business you are. And like, there's a reason I left, and he's kind of remembering
yes,
it.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah.
Like, and
okay. That's again one of those things where it's like when you have friends who move back home for a little while, like, if for whatever reason there's a breakup or something happens, or like, and they have to move back home for a bit, and then they're just so bummed out about having to be back home because, like, I forgot how much I hated being here. Like, I love you, but I don't want to live here.
I don't like it here, right? And he's like, it's more than that for him. I think it's he doesn't like his mom, which is another whole thing.
Well, he had this whole different life, all this independence. He had this, you know, job that he thought he was hot shit in, and he was like important in, and then now it's like bottom of the barrel,
proving his mom that he's not, you know, that he doesn't, he's not good enough or whatever. He's not.
Now he's getting pushed around by his little old lady mom again, and he's like, great.
Yeah. Well, he's being infantilized, right? Like, he's being treated like, he's literally being given like cereal to eat. You know, of course, it's Star Wars food, so it's like, it's hard to know if that's like actually cereal, or maybe like that's what people eat in Star Wars. I don't know, but that's the impression I think we're supposed to be given, right? And we do know it's blue milk, so it's like, how any other things you eat with milk, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely cereal.
Yeah. I love how he picks it up and looks at it like, fuck, are you serious?
Well, they look like little planets, like little Earths.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true too. Yeah. So I just like how that the implication of the conversation that his mom had with his uncle is that they basically spent the whole time talking shit about him and about how he can't do anything right, and they don't know what he should do, and you know, like, and he's like, well, no wonder, he's like, I didn't get to hear his side of the conversation, but you certainly weren't doing me any favors. So I can totally understand it. Like, you know, I like Cyril as a character in the sense that I think he's like interesting to as a character, fascinating to examine. I think this is a really interesting kind of like angle that I don't think we'd get in most Star Wars stories. Like, we're going to follow his villain, and he's going to go back home, and we're going to follow him while he's at home getting chewed up by his mom. Like, what a weird thing to do, but here we are, and I'm liking it. I'll just put it that way.
Oh yeah, me too. It's definitely a different angle of like a kind of a villain origin story a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a character study. I mean, he turns out to be like the big bad at the end of the series. It makes sense. I mean, everything about how this plays out in the final shot, of course, by the way, is him staring at this hollow of Andor.
Yeah, of Andor,
and
the
implication is that it, you know, Andor ruined his life, right?
Yes, yeah.
And that, you know, if he can capture this guy or kill this guy, he can take back his life and take back charge of his life and become his own man again. So
exactly.
I just think it's like, you know, we wouldn't normally, the Imperial villains are just nameless, faceless. Sometimes they have names, but often they don't. Mustache twirling villains, right? You know?
Yeah.
So I just think that, you know, a lot of the ones we meet in this show are in some ways still that, but we're just getting so much more context and nuance here. Right. So anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I liked it. Anything else you want to say about Cyril?
No, not really. It was, we pretty much summed it up that it's, you know, just like, you know, that typical story. Like, he was a bully when he had this job, and then he goes home and he gets bullied by his mom. So,
right. And the bullies, people who are bullied often become the bullies. So,
yeah, exactly.
Kind of the cycle of life there.
Yeah. But I'm interested to maybe learn a little bit more about his uncle and what his uncle does and what this favor is going to be and kind of what that's going to do for him. Because at some point they do say, like, oh, your uncle said, like, you were never meant to be a police officer, and that's not what you should have been doing. And then he's like, well, what does he think I should be doing then? And she's like, oh, he's still thinking about it. So it's like, and you're like, okay, so like, where are they going to, if he didn't think he was fit for being like a, you know, a whatever
like a cop.
Private cop. Yeah. Why would he be like put into like
a soldier,
the Imperial Academy, right? Like that doesn't seem.
But maybe
that's very similar.
He goes against his family's wishes and joins the Imperial Academy on his own.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's true.
For that same purpose.
But yeah, I guess, yeah, I'm curious to see what how he turns out maybe in the next next few episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems to be not moving at a very fast pace, so
we're no.
this for a yeah. while. And by the way, like we also find out in the same episode when Andor is being questioned about his weapon that he stole from this guy, right? He's like, what was his name? And I was like, I didn't even get a name. So this is an example of how the axe forgets, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is a theme that plays throughout the entire episode. You'll see one side or the other or sometimes both at the same time. So in this case, the axe could be the mom, right? Constantly chopping at her son, tearing him, like wearing him down, lowering his self-esteem, all this stuff. And he didn't forget that, right? And he's unhappy to be back. And his life is now ruined by Andor, his axe, right? Who ruined his life.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
At the same time, continuing the mom theme, the axe is, you know, the mom as the axe does not consider how her actions are affecting her son.
Oh, no, of course not.
And Andor, who's, you know, ruined his, quote unquote, ruined his life, doesn't even know his name, doesn't even know him, doesn't remember him probably, right? If he sees him again, he probably wouldn't recognize him, right?
Oh, probably not,
So there's that kind of that interesting, I think that's just an interesting dynamic. We'll touch on that as we go on here.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at Andor and the adventures of him and the heist squad. So we catch up with Andor as he wakes up and finds that Skeen has gone through his stuff. There's a lot of tension with Skeen this episode. We find out that Skeen says, anyway, that Vel asked him to do it, but the impression is, I think, that he's lying about that. He's like,
probably.
She's sleeping, right? And I didn't pick up that the first watch, but on my rewatch, I definitely picked that up. And then, you know, he's washing his shirt or whatever he's doing, and doesn't have a shirt on, and there's a brief exchange about his tattoos. Skeen has a couple tattoos.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I tried to look up, like, there's a couple references. So he, you know, he's got one that's a barcode. I think it implies that he was an Imperial prisoner at one point, right? And it's...
Yeah, because...
Go ahead.
The one on his chest is, like, crate head or something.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. I was trying to look up some of this stuff, too, but I don't know how much stock I put in what I read. But you go ahead on what you kind of...
Well, I don't know. You go first, and I'll
to me, so like he has the one on his chest that he's like, you know, Andor picks it up immediately on like, okay, that means crate head. And then the other one means by the hand. But
yeah,
I'm not too sure if these are like, it's like triggering something in my brain of like, I know there's like very specific, like, especially in like American military, there's very specific tattoos for certain designations. Like the Marines have specific tattoos and like the Navy have specific tattoos. So I'm curious if maybe it's something kind of Star Wars version of this, like a crate head is like a specific like branch of something. You know what I mean?
Well, I feel it's a specific prison branch, but, I think that's my
or
that's
that yeah
got, yeah
yeah like maybe a prison and then yeah the by the hand one. I was like, oh, I'm not too sure because it looks really like Mandalorian kind of to me, but
yeah,
I don't know.
That one's interesting, and it sounds very it just sounds very cool. Like it sounds something that you hear in Game of Thrones, like a house or something.
Yes,
but
it's interesting that Andor knows what those are and can read what they are. So I'm like, okay, because he spent time in those military academies as a kid. Like from 16 to whatever, he was basically drafted into the military. And I'm assuming Skeen was too, because I think they kind of talked about that.
But, yeah. I mean, he says, okay. So, yeah. And we learn that Crate Head, presumably a prison, hence with the barcode thing. We don't know what by the hand means, but it could also be a prison tattoo of some kind.
They also talk about locking, they made a lot of cages or something. It's like,
exactly.
Yeah, I was like, oh, interesting.
Just context clues there. There's no direct references there, but for all we know, we'll get some reveals of what that means or a comic book will explore that. You know, there's a lot
Sounds very cool. I saw a lot of stuff where I was like, oh, that means, because there's like a Thrawn thing where like the hand of Thrawn, but it's like, I don't really think this guy would have met Thrawn. I don't know.
Well, and yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Someone else was like, oh, it's the Emperor's hand, like Mary Jade. And I was like, that's a bit of a reach also, I think.
I feel like those are both reaches, yes. I 100% I was
like,
agree that that's
yeah,
a reach.
I'm like, I think these are both very much reaches, and this is maybe something completely different. I don't think this guy has anything to do with the Emperor or Thrawn. Because those guys are like very high up in the military.
Yeah, and he says he's always hated the Empire, right? So it's like...
Yeah, exactly. You know, so
that
it's,
or he's maybe he is the turncoat, right? The suspicion we had was that there's always at least one traitor. So maybe maybe he is a traitor. Maybe those tattoos mean something else than we're not familiar with. So the only thing that's obviously we know for sure is that Krayt... like a Krayt dragon, like from the Mandalorian that we saw. But like, that doesn't necessarily mean that the prison was on Tatooine or anything. It just like, it's just like a cool word, you know?
Yeah.
They
both sound real cool though. I was like, man, they
did some
by
the
good,
hand,
like,
Krayt head. Yeah. That's like you guys did some good Star Warsing, pulling Star Wars words out of your hat to come up with that one. That's good. But anyway, the point of this whole conversation is that they are what Skeen is trying to do, and he's trying to do it the whole episode, is trying to understand Andor's motivations, understand where he comes from a motivational standpoint, again, not necessarily his origin story, but just try to get an understanding of why he's there, right? Because he doesn't trust him. And I think it's fair for Skeen to feel that way, to be honest, but I think he's going extreme.
Yeah. His whole group has been together for like 5 months, whereas Andor's been there 2 days out of nowhere. Yeah. So
right.
I totally get the suspicion and animosity and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's where we get the whole, you know, talking about how he's like, oh, so what are you here just for? Revenge? He's like, that'll do for now, which I think is cool on its own.
Yeah.
But then he talks about how the axe forgets and the true remembers, and which, you know, if we're talking about just purely what the concept of this means, which is that, you know, the an axe being a metaphorical representation of the Empire, being that it will do all sorts of harm, but it doesn't care about those things. It doesn't remember the damage and the pain that it caused. But that pain on an individual level, the tree, right? The individual who's being affected by the axe can never forget these things because it scars them. It's carved into them. Right.
Of course.
I think it's a very powerful metaphor. It's very cool.
I think it is too. I very much like it. And it's so true because then it's like, and you just know that that fuels people so much more when it's like they know that they don't even remember hurting
they
you. They don't even remember the awful things. They don't care. They don't know who you are.
Just
they don't,
business.
They've immediately like forgotten about the awful things that they've done to you because they've moved on and to the next.
On to
so
the next
it's
awful
like,
thing.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, it's a very good metaphor. I like it very much.
So I think that this is a cool, interesting exchange. We also find out that, and I don't think we found this out necessarily this episode, but Andor finds out that Vel and Cinta are an item. They sleep, they're a couple of some kind. Not of some kind, a lesbian couple.
Yeah, I figured that as soon as he said something along the lines of like, oh, she's already sharing a blanket or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And they like give each, and then they cut to the two of them and they're like coming out of their tent together. So it's like, okay, makes sense. Yeah.
Cute.
And I mean, it really, at this line really only pays off for a line later in the episode where they're wondering about why, you know, if Vel told Cinta about
about
the whole being paid thing. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's why that's there, I think. And then the last line, because Andor he's really not revealing anything at this point, which is that he just wants to win and walk away. And then I love the line delivery here from Skeen about he's walking away from Eben Moss Backrack. He walks away and just looks back, says, "Wouldn't that be nice?" And then just walks away. I just think that just like wouldn't that be lovely? You know, just this concept of, you know, once you're in, there's no getting out. These people here are so ingrained in their hatred of the Empire, their own rebellion, which is a concept that we get introduced to a little bit later in the episode here. But that there's no end to it. There's no end state. You know, there's no just walking away. There's no victory, really. you know, for these people, not in the long term. And I just,
especially like when so many of them, especially when so many of them have lost something too, it's like, like even if you win this one, you don't get to walk away because you don't get back the things that they've taken from you.
You don't get
either.
Your brother back, right? Which is what we learned skiing later, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So next we catch up with Andor. He is sitting down for breakfast with Nemec. And this is kind of where we get to a little bit more, learn a little bit more about Nemec. He's given, Andor's given some Drey milk. These are the Dreys are those like sheep, like six horn creatures that we see. They're very cute.
They look like little demon sheep. I like it. They're funny. Yeah.
And so Nemec pulls out an old navigator unit. And turns out this is made from an old Polaroid camera.
Polaroid camera. I clocked that the second I saw it. I was like, that's definitely an old Polaroid camera.
Oh, really? Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Oh yeah. The second I saw that thing, I was like, and just the way they were like holding it too. Like you never, I felt like they were purposely like kind of always trying to half hide it so that you couldn't like directly tell that that's what it was.
I don't know. I think it's cool. It's like, Cantono or whatever, which is just like a ice cream maker, you know, like that kind of stuff. Is that stuff is fun. I have no problem with that at all.
That's definitely a Polaroid camera.
They're talking about, it's essentially the idea of like having a GPS and someone coming over with a sextant and being like, this could never be hacked. They can't track you with this thing. You know, it's like, but I don't know how to navigate with the stars. He's like, but once you learn, then they could, then that's how they get you, you know, like that. It's like, that's the, what's the character's name from New Girl who always talks about how that's how they get you.
Schmidt. Is it Schmidt?
No, not Schmidt. His buddy. What's his name?
Oh, I don't remember. I haven't watched. Yeah. I've seen a bit of it, but yeah.
Anyway, there's a character on New Girl who's constantly like, you know, that's how they get you, you know, like fault, like it's like using credit card. Oh, that's how they get you, you know.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
And so that's basically what this character is, but much more nuanced. And so he's talking about how, you know, this pre-Empire navigator is, maybe it's harder to use, but it's completely yours and can be fixed. And there's some like subtle references to the fact that, you know, you could never fix your iPhone, for instance, you know, like it's not, you couldn't open it up and fix it yourself, really, you know?
Right. Yeah.
If it breaks and, you know, or your fridge or a lot of these things that like back in the day used to be made in a way that if it broke, you could fix it. Right.
Yes.
So I think there's a little bit of that, but there's also kind of like a, hey, you know, this progress has made us soft and it's made us easy to be stomped by their boot, basically.
Right.
It's just a cool metaphor. But he talks about how he believes. And we've actually heard Skeen talk about how he's a true believer. It's all about the cause, right? And he talks about how he sees oppression everywhere, right? And is writing a manifesto. So we know this type, right? The kind of the obsessive type who does clearly understand the battle that they are up against, you know, this fight against fascism. Though he doesn't say it as much that specifically, but he understands the intellectually what it takes, and intellectually he talks about, all we need is a few more ideas to overthrow the Empire, right?
Yes,
good ideas, but maybe gets lost in the weeds a little bit, right? You know, if you really do see oppression everywhere, you know, everything is a everything is a nail. If you're a hammer, all you see is a nail. That's the analogy I'm looking for, right? So for him, you know, he's obsessed with this, but maybe a little too far. You know, I don't know. What did you think of Nemec?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like how unique they all are, but sometimes with him, he's a little squirrely. So I don't know. Like, I don't fully trust him. I'm just like, yeah, he just seems.
The type that's definitely going to get killed?
Either that or like get scared, or like he has all these ideas and great ideas and it's just like, ugh, like, I don't know. I get a bad feeling about him. So
I think he's just likely going to die. I think he's he's like very innocent in that way.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't know about you. I don't know how long you're going to last. We'll see.
I like the line he says about how the pace of oppression outstrips our ability to understand it. Now, mm-hmm. one of the things that I think this amazing kind of thoughtful thing that they mention in the Screen Crush recaps that I always watch to try to catch the Easter eggs that I might not have seen myself, and I just find them entertaining. But they mention how it's a great analog to our modern life. My nose is so itchy. I don't know what is going on. Ugh. sorry. Just like watching myself constantly having to scratch my nose on this live recording. Anyway, apologies there. But this concept that our lives are so complicated. There's a war, there's war in Ukraine. There's inflation. There's climate change. There's up in Canada. There's the residential schools. There's there's all these things all happening. It feels like happening all at the same time, and you just want to step back and escape it and just leave me alone, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of it kind of forces people into the shell where when there's all so many things that you can't possibly wrap your head around all of it
exactly.
Try to grapple with it all. And I struggle with this on a regular basis. It's very easy to get lost in this kind of negativity of the world when there's so much pain and suffering and sadness in the world. And, you know, the way that they kind of stated here is that it's an intentional, intentional byproduct of the way that the empire, you know, acts. It's like, how can you be upset about one atrocity when there's 40 atrocities? How do you even unpack that? Right. And yeah, it's like exactly. Every other week there's another one. It's like, how are you supposed to possibly stay, you know, how are you supposed to maintain hope there? How can you even grapple with those things? So I think this is, again, just pointed to this show being the most thoughtful Star Wars show from a larger idea standpoint. It's very good. Yeah.
I feel like we even got that a little bit with the Republic though, too. Cause like anytime like Anakin or Ahsoka was getting like overly, like not overly, but like upset about something going on, be like, why aren't we doing something for these people? Why aren't we doing something for this? Why are we letting them be slavers?
Right.
Yeah. And then it was just like the Republic being like, oh, well, we can't intervene in everything. We can't help. Right.
Why is there so much slavery going on in the galaxy?
Yeah. Like, right? I thought Republic, we like ended that. And they're like, well, yeah, that's not really our territory and it's politics and it's always, you know, that kind of thing where it's like,
right.
But the Empire is like the opposite, right? They're the one causing all right. this awful shit.
Right.
It just like piles on people and then people get disheartened and they stop caring about stuff, which is.
Right. But he does also make a great point, Nemec does, which is that fundamental rights are hard to strip. And again, a great allusion, I think, intentional one, and maybe not to Leia's line to Tarkin about the harder you squeeze, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And the harder they try to stomp the boot, the more oppression they try to cause, the more rebellion they're going to create. It's a self manifesting problem. So
yes,
for them anyway. Okay, so love that. I think that's a really great exchange. He gets a little caught up in his own weeds where he starts like comparing his manifesto to the navigational unit, and it's like, okay, dude, you're getting a little heavy for your own good here.
Yeah,
getting a little lost. Anyway, so that's that. Then we have a planning session where Vel and Tamarin meet with Andor to figure out a way to get their escape ship into the sky, basically out of the barracks and into the sky. Basically, they have the plan like 95% figured out, but there's this one piece that they don't quite know. And their plan up till now, up till 3 days before the mission, was to figure it out when they got there, which is wild. And Andor, I love his reaction. He's like, you guys don't know? Your plan was to just figure it out? He's like, no. I'm definitely flying now. This is bullshit, right? And
which is totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, no. It's like, mine ass is on the line. By the way, this is a concept I think is shared by, you know, the others have said this in other ways. It's like, we need to know more about you because our ass is on the line and you're part of the team, right?
Right.
And he's saying, if my ass is on the line, I'm going to fly this ship because you guys don't know what the fuck you're doing. And I think that's a completely fair statement to make. I just thought that was a really... Ultimately, I don't know what this scene really adds other than maybe doubt for Andor and maybe, you know, doubt for us that this plan despite how regimented they are in their planning and their strategizing and how long they spent preparing, that they're not as equipped to handle what is about to happen as they maybe think.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of that and a bit of the fact of it's like, okay, well, they actually very much need him. Like it's, you know what I mean? It's there. I feel like a lot of them are kind of slowly realizing that him being here is
pretty
going
good.
To be helpful. Yeah, yeah. Like even when they're doing like the little military drills and stuff like that. And he's giving us insight about like, okay, well, you two should switch because your weapons are different hands and like that kind of stuff. Like he has these little insights that they don't
that
really.
So cool. I just thought that was such a badass moment where he's like, okay, well, because they're like all pissed, like, well, you know, why don't you learn the mission before you start telling us how to do it? And I was like, he's like, I'm just kind of give you guys a tip. And then I love how Vel's like, well, wait a minute, why would you do that? Which again, I get the impression that Vel is, and we already know this from last episode, that she's in over her head.
She's
out of her depth.
Much.
And she's seeing these moments from Andor where he clearly knows more about this stuff than she does. And she wants to maintain a sense of leadership. But to do so, she has to walk a tightrope. And so in this case, she's like, well, no, you know, let's hear him out, you know? And and turns out he has like the way that he has to back it up, by the way, with telling everyone what their hand is, like
what their hand is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like I love my favorite one, by the way, in that whole thing, which is that Nemec is favored.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just like favors his left, but shoots right.
Yeah.
You know, or the other way around.
Yeah. Favors right, but shoots left. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the line reading there. Yeah.
Whirly.
So I just think that all, you know, it's like well, I golf right, but I play hockey left. It's like there's a lot of that kind of stuff. But
Adam's my partner, he's one of those weird opposites.
Yeah,
like that. So there are people
ambidextrous.
Yeah, I guess so. It's
but I think you're only ambidextrous if you can write and like be fully capable.
No,
because
there's ambidextrous like baseball players that like pitchers who can pitch with both hands.
Right.
They're very rare. But yeah.
Okay. So we dealt with the Nemec stuff. We're doing the planning stuff. There's more practice. We talked about like they're walking like a soldier. By the way, you know, we're not going to cut to it right now, but the way that they do it where they're like, you know, have you ever walked like a soldier before? He's like, oh, I've seen it done. He's like, well, you're going to have to practice. And then we cut to the ISB agents and these guys walking like soldiers. And I thought that was a really cool little thing. It helps frame for later, you know, okay, they are actually achieving what they said they were going to do. Right. So I think that's cool. And we talked about the weapon thing. And then they get buzzed by a TIE fighter who's just, I guess, being a jerk. Like an asshole pilot.
Absolutely, just being a dick. Like,
I love how he's like, it seems like he's like flying by and they're like, oh, he's gone. He's like, I don't think so. And then he kind of comes over the hill and then blasts by. It looks great, by the way. It looks super cool.
It does, yeah.
But I just think this idea that he's flying by, he's like, oh, wait, look, there's people over there. I'm going to go buzz them. And then just goes and absolutely. Like that would be terrifying because like it also looks like
farmers
to shoot at them or whatever because they don't know that maybe they think they maybe spotted something and now he's going to take them out or whatever.
Yeah,
it's cool. Yeah. So they get spotted by the TIE fighter, but it's fine that he's just fucking around. And then another cool cut because when the typical cut after this is we cut to Lieutenant Gorn and we see that same TIE fighter flying over the watchtower. So I think that was a cool, interesting way to cut. Like, hey, this is all happening at the same time. They do something interesting later with the ISBs where they're kind of showing how the time is passing in a specific way. I think it's interesting. But with the kind of the hallway scene, I don't know if you
remember.
Yeah. So Andor practices some Adani phrases. Meanwhile, Skeen, still fucking around, is still poking around his stuff. They get into another little spat there. And then as Andor gets dressed into kind of his soldier gear as they're preparing to leave, he tries to hide his kyber crystal around his neck instead of in his boot, which seemed like it was working pretty good. So, I
yeah,
I don't know why he changed that up. But then that doesn't work out for him because later on he does figure that out. But in between that, they burn their stuff. So they burn their models and all that other stuff. And they share a drink to the rebellion, right? And they head off the next morning, the day before the actual heist begins.
Right.
Nice to see them sharing a drink, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I like the "to the rebellion" line, but nothing really. It's like these kind of quick cuts, and there's nothing really happens there other than just passage of time. And then on the way to the garrison at the top of a mountain. Or on the way up to the top of a mountain, we find out about Lieutenant Gorn's involvement, how he got involved in this. What's his rebellion, right?
Right.
And it turns out he fell in love with a local woman and then lost that, lost a promotion because of it. And then lost the woman, and then lost his taste in the Empire. Now, the implication there to me is this. He's stationed on the planet. He falls in love with one of the locals, right?
Right.
It's considered beneath you if you're in the Empire.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Fraternize with the locals, right? Ugh, these backcountry people, these country bumpkins, ugh, right? And because of that, he's passed over for promotion, and that in and of itself enough to piss someone off, but maybe not enough to make you, you know, try to steal from your own, you know, employer. But then. Next, what happens, I guess, I think the Empire probably kills that woman in some
probably, way. Or probably does something that she dies in. And absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that she just left him, but that the Empire caused her to die in probably some way.
Yes.
And then we say he lost his taste for the Empire. You know, that was the bridge too far for him. And that was it. And now he's now the inside man. And boy, does he play that role really well. And we'll get to Lieutenant Gorn as the next segment here. But I just liked how the moral of the story for this scene is that everyone has their own rebellion, and then we're meant to question what Andor's is, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
We kind of know a lot about the other characters, not necessarily what their pure motivations are, but we kind of understand who they are. And Andor is presenting someone who is an enigma. He doesn't have any of those things. And so, you know, as his, Clem, you know, as the character of Clem, he's an enigma, and this is what confuses Skeen. He doesn't really trust him because he's putting on a facade, and he doesn't reveal some of these kind of human truths that are required to be a part of something like this.
Yes, so, yeah. Kind of like everybody else seems to have these very, you know, specific stories, right?
Personal
but
stories.
They haven't got his out of him yet, so.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, he does have one, but he's playing a character, so he can't really reveal it.
Yeah.
So they get to the top of a mountain. They're taking a break, and Skeen threatens Andor. He pulls a knife on him and steals this kyber crystal. And I love Skeen here. He's like, "I knew it. I knew he was lying. I freaking knew it." He just feels so self-satisfied here, and I think, you know, considering how we've seen him behave, it's like totally natural to believe that he would react that way.
Oh, absolutely.
I also love how he kind of appraises it at 30,000 when Luthen said it was worth 20,000. I also think that's a fun, like, distinction.
Yeah, yeah.
Because either he doesn't know or it's worth more than Luthen says. Either way, it's just, I think it's a fascinating. It's like you could easily just say it was worth 20,000 and no one questions it, but it just adds this electric texture about who's telling the truth and why and all that kind of stuff. I love that. And so, basically, they get into a standoff. There's nothing settled here because there's a ship passing by. We learned in a previous scene with Lieutenant Gorn that it might be an engineering officer from Coruscant because they're coming in a Lambda shuttle.
Right, yes.
So that's probably what it is. Again, just for context clues, that's cool, but we kind of just see it in the background. And I just, by the way, I love how Nemec is like, "No, it's all good. It looks like it's going to somewhere else. No worries." And they're all just like standing there with like knives held on each other and like blasters pointed at each other. It's a cool kind of like Mexican standoff there. And again, just speaking to how this show is kind of that one next level up, because it's easy to just go do that and be like, okay, on to the next thing. But, and we're going to leave this kind of unresolved. But instead, it kind of takes that next step and says, you get this shot of Andor kind of taking a deep breath and thinking. And then he decides to reveal what is essentially his motivation. And you know, whether it's he's revealing all of his truth here, he's not. Doesn't matter. He's revealing enough of it to gain the trust of the group and to reframe him in their eyes as kind of a little bit more honestly, right? So he says that he is being paid, right? Which is a shock to all of them, right? He's like, I'm being paid to be here. But what I do like is that he kind of backs up the fact that he's being paid by being better than most of them at what they're doing, despite the lack of preparation, right? They're all very serious, and but he keeps kind of pointing out their flaws in their plan. And it kind of justifies, like, hey, I'm the professional, you know?
Yeah.
And you guys have reasons to be here, but for me, you know, this is business. And, they all take it in, I think, different ways. And it's not revealed exactly how they all feel about it. But I just think it's a pretty shrewd move by Andor to do that. And it doesn't backfire on him as much as it backfires on what's her name, the leader, Lev. So I just, and because we get that, like I said, that moment where her girlfriend's like, well, she didn't tell me either.
Yeah, so, looks at her. Yeah. She's like, no, I didn't know either. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I guess the other kind of revelation here, and I really liked, which was that, like, hey, I understand you're all nervous. The day before is very nerve-wracking. You're scared, right? But there's a difference between being scared and losing your nerve. And you're losing your nerve and you're trying to blame it on me, right? If you don't want to do it, don't do it. But it's not my fault. You know, I'm here to help make this go better. I'll walk away from this if you don't think it makes sense. But I just thought, I loved that it kind of was this kind of like come to Jesus moment for a lot of the team. They're like, oh man, wait, yeah. These motivations do feel a little off, and maybe I am doing these investigating him for the wrong reasons. So I just thought that was like a really emotionally intelligent move by Andor, a shrewd, smart guy. Anything else you want to say about this?
Yeah, no, I just like that he kind of comes at least a little bit clean about his motivations and why he's there. Mm-hmm. I think it helps this kind of like animosity, and I think it's a good thing to get that out of the way before they go into this whole endeavor, right? So I'm glad they kind of tied that up a little bit and then, you know, to at least kind of erase some of that conflict. So, because it would have been annoying if they're just like fighting each other the whole time.
I agree. I think it's the right move, not just in universe, but also from a storytelling perspective. It helps bond the team. It's good.
Yeah. And it's like, it's nice that we get to actually like learn everybody's kind of motivations, at least not everybody's, but most of them. We get kind of a little backstory, which is cool. So
we learn more about two of them, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we may or may not learn enough about the rest, but they all feel deep enough to not stand out as being more paper thin than another, for whatever reason. So, last thing with Andor is they arrive at the garrison at dusk. They set up a fire to signal Gorn, which he receives. Skeen gives an apology to Andor. He basically tells him about his brother. And again, this is the kind of this direct analog to the axe and the tree.
Right.
Right. By the way, of course, also Gorn's story, very clear metaphor there as well. Pretty clear. And then Skeen's thing is that not only was he imprisoned, but his brother, who was a farmer, just a peaceful person, was, forced to kill himself, basically. They annexed his home and his farm, and there's nothing he could do about it. And in a moment of despair, I think he said he filled his rocks with his pockets with rocks and like walked into a lake, basically, which is like...
Yeah.
Super dark.
Oh,
very depressing.
Right. So sad, but it's like the Empire caused that directly. So,
And he's like, well, I hated them my entire life, but he's like, I can't. I think the way he says it, he's like, I can't even put into words the way I feel about it now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That it's just so painful, so hurtful that this could happen and that they can just get away with it. And there's no repercussions that he's just filled his life with rage and pain and anger. It's a it's a, also, again, super relatable because, you know, my great grandparents who lived in Hungary when the Soviets took over following World War II had their, they owned a soda water bottling factory.
Okay.
Which was annexed by the Russians, by the USSR. And they just that was just gone. Just, you don't get nothing. You don't get anything for it. It's just gone. And it's just, you just, there's no recourse. Of course, they tried, you know, they went to, you know, they didn't get to escape, but my grandparents, you know, did with my mom. So, you know, I think there's just like some of these things, you know, they are already using the Scottish Highland kind of analogy for the people of the planet. And just like there's a lot of this, again, this texture, these layers that are there that I think are fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Andor. Anything else you want to say about him and his merry band of
No,
pirates?
I don't think so. Like I said, it's just, it's nice getting a little bit more tidbits on their, in their backstories. So, and yeah, they're starting to see him as more useful and trusting him.
Yeah,
as
and it's all going to fall apart next week. And then we get Lieutenant Gorn, and we've been intercutting with Andor here, and I probably could have included this, but it just felt like it was so separate because he's not with them. It made more sense to talk about him separately. And now knowing his backstory, it's got a little bit more weight to it and a little bit more depth to it, which is that Gorn, first we see him, he's pissed because the temple that they're going to use as their staging area for the break-in is a mess. It's being used as target practice by the soldiers. And he wants it all cleaned up, you know, in ship shape. Basically, he's kind of like prepping the base for invasion.
Which I think
is pretty cool. But he does it in this like such a cool, like subtle way where he acts like an asshole Imperial, but in like the perfect amount of assholeness to achieve the ends he wants without being suspicious. It's like very, it's very good. Like it's super clever.
Yeah, he just kind of puts it in a way of like, what, like, get this junk out of here. What the hell? Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I also like there's this idea of how there was people who were supposed to do it, but they were pulled away to help the commandant's wife move furniture. So again, this idea of like opulence and like these people who are kind of above the law that they can recruit help from the military to help move stuff around their house is kind of an example of how this stuff kind of seeps into the empire and it gets worse over time. And we see it later with the ISB stuff as well, when that officer asked to be named a prefect, because we find out that a prefect was the one who stole the farm from Skeen's brother. And it's just like these little kind of subtle connections. And it just kind of say, hey, you know, like these positions of power are constantly abused in these fascist systems.
Exactly.
And just here's a victimless example with the whole furniture thing, you know, but again, just a kind of another subtle example.
Yeah, exactly.
Gorn then meets with Corporal Kenzie on the top of the dam. Great shot here. Beautiful. I think they couldn't help themselves from having a shot on the top looking out, and they kind of talk about the view being amazing. And I'm sure they all felt like that when they're standing on top of it. And again, I mentioned this is kind of the scene where we kept from that tie flying over. And, there's this this conversation about tearing things down to kind of build the airbase. It's like, oh, is it true that are the rumors true that this is all going to be destroyed at some point? And, you know, it's like, well, it's been discussed, but who knows? I don't really follow what they're talking about here. Are they talking about the garrison being ripped apart and like the land being destroyed to put in an airbase, or what are they kind of talking about here? Did you pick?
I kind of thought because he's kind of looking out. Like, obviously, not at the water, but at the in front. I thought he meant, like, that scenery is getting destroyed, and they're putting a base there, like an air base.
Oh, yeah.
So they're, like, expanding what's already there is kind of what I
thought. Right, or, yeah, like the temple and maybe some of the...
That other, like, landscape and everything there. That's kind of what I gathered from that.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Then... there's this kind of gross talk about it. He talks about how the Donnies, I guess, which is like a short for all Donnie. We have some folks here on Twitch, Jelly Karma. Yes. Full spoilers here for Andor. We're talking about episode 5.
Yeah.
and we're about halfway through. So just to be warned.
Yes, definitely spoilers.
But that is to say, you're always welcome. Please, we do this every Thursday evening. Love to have you here. Let's talk Andor. So this kind of, again, this gross, casual talk, and again, this kind of subtleness of the show is where I think it does its best work, which is that I think we are all familiar with like casual racism. Right?
Yeah.
And so this is an example of casual racism. They're talking about these Aldanis being stinky, right? And he's like, oh, can you imagine what a couple thousands of them would be like? And you know, the look and the answer from Gorn, and I just, again, thoughtful and smart and well written, is just like, yeah, I can't imagine, because he knew what that was like, and he liked these people, and he liked, you know, I just think that's really interesting.
And it's just such a, you know, we always talk about the Empire being space Nazis. So again, it's just kind of that, like, they're just like so awful to groups that they see as others, right? So just no care for anybody else. It just makes it easier to hate them. So
it's true. And it's like, what I find interesting, and this is kind of a more of a meta thing, which is that, you know, of course, Clint Gorn played by a black man. The Empire is not, you know, racist in our traditional sense, but they're racist against aliens, right? Which is this kind of this concept of anything that doesn't look like a human in the Star Wars world is lesser than Imperial.
Or even within, if you're outside the Empire, like, they don't see you, even other humans, they don't even see as human if you're like a farmer or you're an impoverished system. Like, they don't care. Like, that's the kind of thing that they're like.
Right.
It's like,
they're also classist. Yeah, that's, classist. That's true. I think there's something to be said about
you're correct.
The kind of the extra texture here, which is having, you know, a black man having to listen to this casual racism about the locals,
even despite that
he's not necessarily, he's not the one who's getting, being on the receiving end of that. But it's just, I think, an extra layer that's interesting. But
The fact that it's like, this is what this, I think, a lesser officer like thinks that his superior wants to hear, right? Like, these are the kind of things that they feel like they've taught, that this is the way they're supposed to speak about other people to their superiors, and kind of like this holier than thou, which is weird because he goes from talking about like how beautiful this place is and like, and then to just be like gross like that. It's just kind of like, man, like,
And so that's one bit of it. On the other hand, you know, they might not be, you know, racist amongst humans, but they are sexist, because we did hear about that in the last episode about how the ISB agent has like a tougher job because she's a woman. So anyway, take that for what you will. Okay. And then last little scene with Gorn is we have to see the interior of the base, which we'll see much more, I think, in depth next week. And we see the ship on the rail and all that kind of stuff. And we see that he's kind of given the gears to some of his men about how they didn't paint the gantry. And, you know, despite having an engineering officer arriving, of course, on all up in their business, right? And he threatens to pull them off of the or put them on the task the next evening during the Eye of Aldani, which is this, like, which we talked about obviously last week, this amazing visual spectacle, essentially, like, I think what they say, like, hundreds of meteor showers all happening at once. And I cannot wait to see what how they visualize that.
Me too.
Next week. But they're kind of like, oh no, we were supposed to, like, that's the only good reason to be here. You can't pull us off of the thing. And then he's like, his little smirk, he's just like, okay, you're right. You know, I'd hate to, I don't want to be the bad guy. So, you know, you guys are fine. Just make sure you paint it the next day. Right. and then they're like, oh, okay, thank God. Right. And so we find out that they're going to have a skeleton crew on inside, which is another kind of a great little piece of info.
And a definite thing he's set up to, like, any other Imperial officer would be like, do you think I fucking care that you want to go outside and look at this thing? No, do your job. Like, but you know, he kind of can play this like tougher, nice guy. Yeah. He totally manipulated it to be like, okay, well, I'll do this favor for you.
Right. To get his
make sure you're not in here. Yeah. Exactly.
And then I love how he just, this little smile as he walks away. I just think it's like this very fun little moment. So that's Gorn. Any other thoughts on Gorn?
No, not really. I just like, I like the his little puppeteering, the way he's
sure
playing his imperial role. And
I like his jacket. I think he's got a fun long coat. Jacket. I think that's cool. Then we go to the ISB, sticking with the Imperials. We get an earlier scene in the episode with Blevin, still the worst name.
Yeah.
Blevin supervising what it looks like Imperial cleanup of Ferrix, right? It's all sorts of activity going on. I think in the Screen Crush recap, they said that there was a what looked like to be like a dry cleaner, like a mobile dry cleaner there somewhere. And he meets up with, Blevin does, meets up with Captain Vanis Tego. That's the name we get from IMDb, who, by the way, is played by an actor here named Willif Scolding. So I'm just going to choose to believe that he was the actor himself was named after Willif Tarkin, and that was destined. Oh. destined to play a character in Star Wars at some point, particularly an Imperial. Because, by the way, I think Tarkin has definite, like, there's definite Tarkin stuff in here. I don't think we'll see Tarkin on the show, though.
No, he's alive, probably not.
The way that Dedra's assistant dresses and does his hair feels very like, well, Tarkin's the most influential man in the Empire, so I should dress and act like him and like do my hair like him. Just feels like a class, like that. I don't know if that's how it is. And like, he's got those like gaunty cheeks in the same way. Like, I just don't feel like it's an accident, you know. So that's my at least weekly reference to Willif Tarkin. So anyway, that's Willif Scolding. He's playing this officer, and he they're talking about how the hotel is being converted into an Imperial base. And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. But he doesn't really care about that. He just wants to be named prefect, which is, he admits is a title, but that doesn't come with extra pay. And Blevin's answer was, I think you can wear a dress for all I care, as long as this is cleaned up by next week.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So anyway, that's that piece. That's really the only Blevin stuff we get other than this, like, brief conversation we have with that he has with his assistants as they're walking past Dedra in the hall.
It's not much.
Which, by the way, I just like a little scene where we kind of get like one storyline passing off to another storyline in a way like that. I just think it's
cool.
Cool. You know, what happened? What did I miss while I was away? You know, I thought that was fun. So anyway, they pass in the hall, and then we have the scene with Dedra working with her assistant, and they're trying to dig deeper into the stolen box, even though she was asked not to. And classic move. And there's a couple kind of fun Easter egg mentions here. We get a mention of Hosnian Prime. We get some mention of Kessel, Fondor, and Jakku, all of course of places we are very familiar with at this point. Hosnian Prime, maybe a little bit lesser known. It's the planet, I'll refresh your memory here. It's the planet that gets basically no screen time and gets exploded in episode 7 by Starkiller Base. Remember when they're all like, oh my God, they blew up the planets. That was Hosnian Prime, which was the capital of the New Republic at the time. By the way, the New Republic took a philosophy where there was no permanent capital. They would move it around to different planets to kind of make the systems feel more a part of the Republic. Didn't help, though. It still blew up. So unlucky for Hosnian Prime. And then we obviously mentioned Fondor. They are what they probably have the largest or some of the largest shipbuilding facilities on in Star Wars. Kessel, of course, which is where Han is from, which we see in Solo, and Jakku, which the desert planet that's essentially a stand-in for Tatooine. So
where Rey is from.
Yeah, which is where Rey's from. Well, where she's left anyway.
Well,
she's not from there so much, but yeah.
Yeah.
So despite having a little self-doubt, she's like, I don't know what I'm doing, which I thought was a fun kind of little line there. They agree that she is onto something, and they're going to keep looking to this. And then we get this really brilliant line, which is that, I know this, if I was them, this is how I'd do it, which I think is a kind of like, oh, these people are very smart and you should be wary of the ISB, which is something that we didn't get enough really of in any other medium. Like, we only ever barely touched on the ISB. This is the deepest we've ever dove into them in any kind of visual media anyway. Maybe more in the comics, but
I always
TV and movies.
Yeah, I always like in Star Wars when we kind of have not the underestimated, but you have that Imperial officer who is like kind of leagues smarter and leagues better than the rest of them. Like you get a lot of that with Thrawn in Rebels because he's so much smarter than anybody else. Like he's so much more calculated and he can like figure out these attacks and these plans that these rebels are making. Yeah. So I kind of get that feel from her too, where she's like, she's putting a lot more work and a lot more effort into this because she has to be noticed and appreciated, I guess, in this job. Mm-hmm. But that also leads her to be like a stronger threat and a stronger officer than some of these other guys who just like walk around being like, oh yeah, that's not worth my time.
Right. No, I think you're right. I mean, there's the hubris of the Empire is also one of its downfalls, right?
Yes.
There's another mention of how they talk about Hosnian Prime and they're like, well, you're not going to get anything out of there because the Navy won't admit that anything is wrong. And you know, you get this impression that the ISB does not think highly of the Navy, right?
Right.
And of course, the Navy is who we see almost entirely through everything else. They're they're the ones who have the Stormtrooper battalions. They're the ones who have the Star Destroyers. They're the ones who are staffing the Death Star. So,
right,
we see them fumbling and bumbling around, more than we ever see the ISB because they're kind of operating in the shadows, but. You get this sense that, you know, the ISB, though smaller, much more lean and nimble and effective despite their lack of scale. And the Navy, you know, they suck up so much budget and they suck up so much attention that they kind of have to put on a good face. And I think that there's like this interesting rub between the ISB and the Navy that is coming out there.
I think it's that too, but I think it also has a little bit to do with the fact that when you run an entire regime out of fear. So like when you have Palpatine and you have Vader running around just killing people anytime they make a mistake, these guys are going to be way less likely to admit when mistakes happen. And when like these, you know, small rebel insurgences happen and they do get away with something, they're not going to report it because they're like, well, I don't want to get choked for this. So they're like, we're just going to brush it under the rug and pretend like nothing's wrong and nothing's really
because
happening.
Like, I think they say the Hosnian Prime they haven't missed a piece or part in over 12 months basically.
Yeah.
And it's like, is that even possible? Like that seems unlikely. It's like too perfect. And that's the other thing that they mention here, which is like, you know, this line from her system, it's too random to be random, which I don't fully, but I think that's a stupid line. I think it's one of the dumb ones. I think out of the like the great writing of the show is that a real thing, that too random to be random? Is that, I don't know. I think of the show Numbers. Do you remember the the show Numbers?
It's kind of along the lines of like eventually there is kind of a pattern and you can correlate those patterns. And it's like, if the same thing happens the same way in different places, then they they're connected, even though it's not happening in the same spot.
Yeah, but I think the impression is that they're not close. They're not similar enough to be a clear pattern.
Right.
Like, it's her hunch and they're looking for more. Right. So I think that I don't know. I just think that it's too random to be random is a silly thing to say.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's just your hunch. You have nothing to back that up with. Okay. Last two storylines, Mothma and Luthen. These will go quick here. So we catch up with Mon Mothma. It's their morning on Coruscant. And her husband doesn't remember their driver's name. You know, your driver's here or whatever. Just really driving home that this guy's a real dingus. And then we find out that she has a daughter, which I don't think we ever knew about before, this kind of interior life for Mon Mothma. She's always just been like a political figure, right? She's a senator. Then she's the rebel leader. And then she's the new chancellor of the New Republic, certainly has a lot of gravitas and weight and all this kind of stuff. And she is a lot, but we never really knew about her personal life or her interior life. And now we're getting this fleshed out, and it gives so much more context to kind of what she has to sacrifice to be those things that create change. So. Anyway, she's meeting up with her family and her daughter's giving her lip. And I just thought this scene was so good because it feels so, I don't know necessarily real, but it feels it fits the dynamic that has been established already about the way that she interacts with her husband, the way that she's hiding things. So she is hiding things from her and her, you know, her family, for their own safety. But by doing so, it creates this gap, this distancing,
like tension. That,
Yeah,
you definitely get this like struggling. I'm just saying you definitely get this like kind of struggling family tension of like, you know, the teenage daughter being kind of like mad at her mom because she just says like everything you do is just for show, and then the dad just like not helping, just being a dick.
Oh yeah, he's just sitting there listening. I love her, by the way. Oh, are you enjoying this? Are you entertained right now?
She's like, thanks for the support, thanks for the help. Like,
and he just has nothing to say as he sits there drinking his tea or whatever, or calf or whatever he's drinking. It's just like, he basically is taking the daughter's side here, which is that, really are just behaving on your own, but they can't. And like, again, this like passive aggressive, like, got to clear it with your mom first, you know, like,
right. Yeah. Just making her be the bad guy.
Right. And it's just like to say, it's like they had a plan. And so what's interesting here is that like her daughter is right to some degree. What they had planned was, I think, designed to use as cover for her to move money.
That was kind of
I think a part of the whole thing. But and you know, is she just a political stunt? No, I don't think so. But she almost certainly does use her daughter in that way, presumably as well. So she's not entirely wrong. But you know, her motivations are sound. But the daughter is in some way justified, is what I'm saying. But the way that she goes about it, cruel. But like we talked about before,
yeah.
That's teenagers like are not smart, so
it's a very typical. It's a very typical family, like it's just a typical dynamic when you're that age to just like not get along with your parents and to just it's very normal. I'd say like that's a very normal like tense family morning where you're just like not getting along with each other.
Well, I love the answer. Oh, is this how you want to start your day?
Yeah.
And by the way, this, I didn't choose this conversation. It's like, well, yeah, you kind of did. By choosing not to fulfill your promise to your mom, you said you were going to do something, and now you're not, and now she's asking why, and you're like, well, you know, it's all about these, like, oh, I didn't choose this on conversation. Okay, smart ass, go to your room. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, you did. So anyway, the way she says, like, oh, that's just so hurtful. Because she doesn't really know how else to describe it. It's like, you're kind of right. But like at the same time, it's like, you don't have to be so sharp about it. Like there's a better way to do it. Anyway, I thought that was a great scene. And then the next scene we get with Mothma is in her car with her husband. And she's talking about how at this gala or whatever they were at that evening, he found out from a colleague or a friend that she had started up a new foundation.
Yes, yeah.
And she's like, well, were you going to tell me? And I just love that. She's like, I didn't think you'd be interested. Why not? It's charitable.
Yeah, I love that dig.
Yeah, that and that look that she gives her, is so funny. And then he's just like, what's his name again? And then asked her to basically ask the driver to like hurry home, I think is the implication there. I just thought it was very passive aggressive.
I just thought it was so funny. She's like, oh, I just didn't think you'd be interested, you know, because it's charitable. Because it's like, oh, yeah, you're such a dick. And you just like rubbing elbows with other rich people. And you make me have these dinner parties with these assholes and don't tell me about it. Like, you know what I mean? Or don't tell me who's going to be there. So, yeah, like, fuck you. Why am I going to tell you about my charity when you like being friends with people who cause famine and death?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And like, so this like, this is all passive aggressive, but it's just dripping with subtext and dripping with drama and like tension. I mean, this marriage is doomed.
You feel like there's like no love between them, and you like not an ounce. It just feels like they're there because for political reasons, they're just married
I mean, that's not necessarily surprising because we see political, you know, marriages of convenience all the time in the real world. So it's like, it makes sense. I mean, I don't know. We don't know the kind of inner stories, but you get the impression that some of these political marriages are purely for show, you know, you know, I think the Trump and Ivana was like, she clearly hated his guts. Like,
oh yeah.
Like they're just so obvious. And it's like, you can't divorce the sitting president. So, you know, but like, that's an obvious example, but this is not a direct parallel here, but clearly there's just this marriage is doomed. So interesting keeping up with her here. Not too much going on, just political, personal drama. And I thought, well acted, brilliantly performed, good stuff. So, any final thoughts on the ISB or Mothma?
Yeah. I mean, the ISB stuff I found had its place. I didn't really feel like the Mon Mothma stuff, like, had a place in
didn't
this episode.
Go anywhere.
Yeah. Like, for me to, like, this was kind of like a takeaway. Like, I just feel like they could have thrown this in the last episode and it would have worked fine.
Sure.
There.
Sure.
Yeah. I just felt like it was a little bit out of place is all I'd say. Like, I liked the second interaction they had in the car because I like when she sassed right. him, but yeah, I just felt like it was a weird spot to kind of have.
It would fit
this,
better
but...
together if these were one larger episode or one mini movie episodes. I think because the timing is, you know, that the evening before
these are like each days later. Yeah. I kind of get that we're seeing these storylines day by day. So it makes sense, but I'm like, I didn't really need to see that. I don't know.
Right. And then last but not least, we have Luthen. He's nervous. He's listening to, and he's like fiddling with an old radio communicator thing. And he's looking for news on the heist that they're going to pull the next day. And he's talking to his assistant and she's like, listen, you're not going to get anything out of this tonight. You're just working yourself up. You know, if you want to be useful, polish some coins or whatever, and just relax. Because, you know, it's out of your hands now, basically. You know, what happens is going to happen and you know, however it's going to play out is going to play out.
Yeah.
And I think she says either it works or it doesn't. He's like, well, that's a comforting thought. And it's like, well, it's very pragmatic, but it's not helpful when someone's nervous.
Right.
And he talks about how, you know, only Vel can trace it back to them, but so can Andor. Right.
Yes.
And of course, we don't know anything about Luthen, so you get the impression that maybe it does get traced back to him via Andor. Yeah. But you don't know.
He definitely seems like a little nervous, right? Like, because he says at some point like that he kind of rushed it or he jumped.
Yeah,
the gun,
he wanted it to happen too bad.
Yes. So now he's worried that maybe he made a mistake by bringing Andor into this, and you know,
right? Well, in practice, practically, he is right. I mean, he brought them in super late. Right, into this whole thing. Ultimately, he might be the one that helps make it work. So, maybe it was the right call. And so, I like when he asks his assistant if she's checked her walkaway bags. Right, so he's got two: one in the store and one on the ship. Right, basically, these are like go bags that
get away.
Leave their life at the last moment. You're at the drop of a hat. You're ready and prepared to do that. You know, I don't personally have a go bag. I know some people like to carry one, like just like in real life. I always thought it's like, really? What? Like, what are you going to... Yeah, maybe, you know, listen, it's one of those, say, like, doomsday preppers. It's like, you know, if you're proven right, boy, will you be the best one here. But, like, it just seems like such an unlikely occasion. When would I ever need it?
I was going to say, the only people that I know that have ever had a go bag are people in their, like, 9th month of pregnancy. Because you have your like hospital bag packed up because you're right. Like, oh yeah, but I didn't want to, like,
that's
all your
very
things, your
type of go bag.
Yeah, like that's like, you know, that's the only time I've ever heard of a go bag. But like, if you have like a doomsday, like,
it's often referenced in like spy movies and stuff.
Oh,
like that.
Yeah.
Like a frog bag is sometimes,
like,
it's called
real
that
life? Like, what do you put in there? I'm so confused.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like,
it's a dude thing. No, it's like you've got like a knife and like some clothes and like, yeah, like a couple supplies and it's
men.
Like I said, I don't have one. I know people who do. I question them on the necessity of it at the time.
That's very funny.
It is funny.
See, to me, I'd be then, like, oh, what, you put like medicine and bandages and like, is it like a first aid kit? But
those things are probably in there too.
First aid kit makes sense, but okay.
Anyway, so that's that. And then the final line here. This time tomorrow, it'll all be over, or it'll just be getting started, which I think is a fun kind of way to end the episode. It directly implies the heist itself, but larger about the rebellion and kind of the greater plan here. I think it's a fun kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's Luthen. The other thing is, it looked like he had like a Jedi and Sith holocron in the background.
Yeah,
on his shelf.
Yeah.
But First of all, they looked way too big.
Like, okay, so that's like a thing. They get smaller. Yeah. It's a thing. They are bigger to start, because I thought that too. And then my partner was like, oh yeah, no, but that's a thing. And like, you see it a few other times is when they actually open them, they get a lot smaller and they like fold.
They like shrink into themselves?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and here's the thing. Why would he have, like, those are extremely valuable things.
Yeah, that's insane to just have those sitting on your shelves. Sitting on a,
so either that or they're like replicas or something.
Yeah, they could be a replica or like a, yeah, an art rendition of them. You know, because like people probably maybe knew those existed. But yeah, you would think that like Sidious would be like, I'm taking those. You kind
of
have
those. I mean, first of all, I don't think, like it's clearly in the back room. I don't think they display those anywhere. It's like, if they are real, it's quite the valuable possession he has there. They should be in his go bag or whatever. So, and it's like, ooh, what do they say? It's the other thing. If they are,
yeah,
real.
Which like, ones are they? They're probably just boring. Yeah. Like,
right, yeah. This is stance one of you know lightsaber training.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other one talking about the Jedi, the Sith one, just like, here's how we choose our Sith names. They all have to start with Darth, but then after that, it's really up to you. We encourage something spooky.
Yeah.
Tyrannus. that's a good one, right? Yeah. Oh, Sidious. Ooh, spooky, you know?
Yeah. so ridiculous.
Darth Vader. Rise, Lord Vader. Anyway, that's my impression of the Emperor. What do you think? Pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's great.
You think we'll get some? Hey, speaking of the Emperor, we saw Ian McDiarmid back briefly in Vader, right?
Yeah.
You think we'll get a little cameo from him at any point in this, even as like a halt, like a public maybe, message to the Empire or something like that?
I would say maybe like a holocron of like, is that what I meant? Holocron? Yeah,
no, holocron. Hollow. Yeah, like
a hollow of like him like being pissed or being like, do something about these rebels or blah, 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 maybe.
Like yeah, but, the ISB potentially. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, something like that,
but,
maybe.
But I feel like maybe, like, I feel like that's to get all the way up to the Emperor, something would have to be very
huge.
Pretty bad. Yeah. Yeah.
And I so don't think he would like talk to them. I think it would be like lower levels, like, you know what I mean? It goes down
or
the chain of command.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he would be like, it would be more like in the background and like a public message to like, you know, to the Empire as a whole, like to the citizens or something. I don't know. I just, I want more Ian McDiarmid as the Emperor. And it's like, we're going to tell stories in this time when he's alive and actively emperoring, then he, you know, we should get more of that. It just not fair if we don't get more. It's really
agreed.
Anyway. Okay. That's it. That's the episode. I enjoyed it despite it being, I think, a little slower than normal, which
is
saying a lot for a show that's already pretty slow. A lot of setup, not very much payoff, but I like the nuances here. Love the title, love the whole metaphor, the axe forgets metaphor. I guess next week will be super exciting. We'll see a heist.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Dies? Who betrays who? how does Andor get out of there? You know, do they get the money? You know, there's all these questions. You know, we'll all find out that next week. But I will be in Japan next week, so the schedule might be different. We'll try to figure it out as best we can.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Okay. Anywho, until then, may the Force be with you, and we'll talk to you very soon.